The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
You might want to buy a Powerball ticket. The jackpot is now up to $1.5 billion after there was no winner again on Wednesday.
We keep giving that advice every day.
We do. Yeah.
This makes it the second largest jackpot in Powerball history with no winners after 39 consecutive drawings. The next drawing is on Saturday, and if there's a single winner, they can choose to take a lump sum payment of $746.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, the other day I said to my wife, did you get a Powerball lottery ticket? Because we were watching the news last night, and this is, oh, the Powerball lottery ticket. Let's check the numbers, right? She didn't get a Powerball lottery ticket. I forgot to buy one, too. I bought one for the one before. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. But I said, I hope no one wins because I want a shot in it. Here's the bottom line. Your chance of winning, pretty darn slim, about 1 in 292 million. So just think about that. 1 in 300 million. It's like dropping a ping pong ball in the mailbox of some American and you happen to be the lucky one. Think of how many mailboxes there are, how many Americans there are. What are we a population of, maybe? 347 million, I think, something like that. Somewhere, so 330, 347, I forget the exact number, but we're 300 million plus. So just think of your chance, you know, dropping a needle in a haystack somewhere. 330 million, thank you, Maggie. 330 million Americans. So your chance of winning the lottery, one in almost 300 million. So it's pretty crazy. But maybe a little later we'll talk about it. Would you want to win? My mother would drive me crazy because she'd be like, oh, I wouldn't want to win the lottery. I'm like, Mom, why not? Oh, I don't need all that money. What am I going to do with that? You know, it's like, hey, set up a foundation. You can do a lot of good with it, you know? Please, what are you talking about? She's not alone. A lot of people feel the same way. I mean, it's a great responsibility, winning that type of money. And to whom much is given, as Scripture tells us, much is required, right? And I think you've got to be judicious and wise and charitable and merciful with that money. So, but the Mega Millions drawing is estimated, we'll see how big it gets, to hit around $1.5 billion, right? $1 billion. That is a major chunk of change. Now, of course, you know, you'll probably walk away with less than half of that. You know, the government takes, you know, if you take the draw, right, which I probably would, or I would take the lump sum is what I meant, you're left with probably about half, and then the government, Uncle Sam, comes in, takes his taxes out. So a lot of that money disappears. But still, you know, I'd be happy with $1 million, right? I mean, everything gets so relative, right? Some people, I'm not going to buy the lottery. It's only at 40 million. It's like, oh, really? A lot of people don't even buy it. My former producer, Jake, never bought a lottery ticket. Never, ever bought a lottery ticket. I wonder if that's still holding true. I'll have to reach out to him and find out, but that's the case. Anyway, that's your heads up. Lottery, I think, is this Saturday. A little later, maybe we will talk about it. You're always welcome to join me here any day. You know the phones are open for you, right? Get in on the conversation anytime. It's 888-914-9149. I want to talk about Tom Brady coming up in a little bit, too. We'll speak to a Tampa Bay writer. I want to talk about his wife. I want to talk about their divorce. Giselle Bundchen supposedly is a good witch, a white witch. I don't believe in good magic or witchery, but we will talk a little bit about that coming up. So Patrick, when's the lottery? It's Friday. Thank you. Patrick Alog is one of the best team members I have because he actually pays attention to what I say. I say it all the time. He's on my phones, right? And, you know, I might say, oh, you know, Senator, and he'll say in my talk back or to on my screen here, you mean Congressman? Oh, you're right. It's Congressman so-and-so. And I just mentioned Saturday. Many of you would have been upset if you bought your lottery ticket or thinking you had a little more time. And that Powerball, those $1.5 billion go. It's Friday. Friday's the day, all right? So, oh, one final thing in the lottery. If you happen to win, right? You and I are friends, right? Right? We're family. Come on. I would love, man. It'd be so great. Maggie, I always say that. I'm kidding. Of course, you do whatever you want with your money, but I would love a surprise like that. Who wouldn't, right? You know, some lost uncle who leaves you $1 million, right? Or you're left in the will. I think it'd be just so fun to have a surprise like that. Or somebody to win the Powerball lottery. Say, hey, Drew, here you go, buddy. Have fun. If I won, and I will get off this topic because there's a lot to talk about. You can tell I've thought about this before, right? I would still work. I often said not only would I help Relevant and all these different charities and groups, but I would build out my team. I mean, there would be so much to do, and I would love it because I find joy in being here every day. And there's a dignity that comes with work. I think it's a call from God. So if you're blessed, it doesn't mean you go retire down in the Bahamas somewhere in Jamaica drinking your rum drink and watching the sunset every day. You can do that if you want. But I think, you know, continue to fulfill the mission God set before you is important. Anyway, that said, one other little bit of cultural news. How about the World Series? Right? I'm a Philly fan. I was born and raised outside of Philadelphia. I always rooted for the Flyers, the Eagles, the Sixers, the Phillies. Unfortunately, they disappointed a lot, the Eagles. They're now undefeated. The soccer team there, the Union, is killing it. And, of course, the Philadelphia Phillies, against all odds, have made it to the World Series. My daughter lives in Houston, and I know a lot of listeners are down in Houston. So it's a fun series. Houston Astros made history last night, and congratulations to Houston. They threw a combined no-hitter. They dominated Philly 5-0. And, you know, Philly the day before in Game 3, just they beat the heck out of their pitchers. I mean, they were smacking home run after home run, right? They had set they tied a World Series record for most home runs. So the series right now is tied 2-2. The Phillies have one more game at home before they head down back to Houston, where the World Series will ultimately be decided. If you were a Philly fan, and Maggie grabbed some audio, I think from Broad Street, all right? If you were in the Philadelphia area, you're very familiar with Broad Street. I'm sure fans went crazy. This is probably audio from Game 3, huh, Maggie? Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't last night. Here you go. Check this out. So it's just some drumming and some shouting, Maggie. That's what you got? Yeah. I hope that was not after Game 4. Had to be Game 3. Congratulations again to the Astros for their combined no-hitter against the Philadelphia Phillies. As I said, Phillies made history the other day when they hit 5 home runs in the World Series there. So at least tying it. So we'll see what happens. I've got to be honest. I'm going to root for Philadelphia. I like the underdog. Hey, did anybody catch the president? You know, did you see that? Maggie was watching some of the audio. She told me about it. We were talking about it this morning. Last night, he gave his closing pitch to the nation before the midterm elections on Tuesday. And he spoke in front of Union Station. This is a few blocks away from the Capitol building, if you're familiar with the area, or if you're not. And he said this. He says, look, people need to think long and hard before voting what he called extreme MAGA Republicans, right? Now, I just want to hit on MAGA for 1 second, right? And it goes back to something I always share with you. There's a power in words. MAGA stands for Make America Great Again. I don't know whether you're Democrat or Republican, but I think we can all share in that ideal, right? That's an acronym for Make America Great Again. That's what MAGA means. That was the slogan for Trump. I just marvel at how the left can take something that inherently is good, Make America Great Again, and twist it to make it the moniker of something you don't want to be called. Oh, if you're a MAGA Republican, you're this evil, violent, you know, capital stormer, right? It's just, it's absolutely, it's not fair, it's not true, and it's not right. They've done the same thing with other language. We've talked about reproductive justice. I've talked about the words pro-choice. They take something that, in theory, is a good, and they associate it with something that is dark. I just think it's a very sinister thing for them to do. And I think the message falls on dark ears. And I was wrong before. During the midterms, the message of the dark, cold, you know, winter, or during the presidential election, the president coming out saying we're in this dark, cold winter and all these people are going to die and, you know, all this horrible stuff. I'm thinking that doesn't motivate anybody. People want hope, right? People want hope. And here you are again saying democracy is under threat, right? And coming out and talking about how extreme, another word, they're using extreme. You'll see this in the ads in your community. The word extreme is associated with any politician who happens to believe that a child in the womb has value and dignity and deserves life, right? This person's too extreme for our values. Well, what the heck are your values, right? What the heck are your values? So I think they're barking up the wrong tree. Sin and evil darkens your mind. It makes you stupid. It blinds you to truth. It blinds you to the light. It blinds you to what is good and true and beautiful. And that's what's happening here. I really believe that. And people, oh, you're saying Democrat. I'm not saying every Democrat is that way. I'm saying this message and this promotion of the culture of death is just that. The president talked about this great threat to democracy. I don't buy it. I don't think there's a threat to American democracy. You know, I mean, we'll cover more of this in depth tomorrow. I do want to unpack it for you, but I thought I'd share just a little bit, if you missed it, of some of Joe Biden's address to the nation yesterday.
I know there's a lot at stake in these midterm elections, from our economy, to the safety of our streets, to our personal freedoms, the future of health care, Social Security, Medicare. It's all important. But we'll have our differences. We'll have our difference of opinion. And that's what it's supposed to be. But there's something else at stake. Democracy itself. I'm not the only one who sees it. Recent polls have shown that an overwhelming majority of Americans believe our democracy is at risk, that our democracy is under threat. They, too, see that democracy is on the ballot this year, and they're deeply concerned about it. So today, I appeal to all Americans, regardless of party, to meet this moment of national and generational importance. We must vote knowing what's at stake and not just the policy of the moment, but institutions that have held us together as we sought a more perfect union are also at stake. We must vote knowing who we have been, what we're at risk of becoming. Look, my fellow Americans, the old expression, freedom is not free. It requires constant vigilance.
Can I just blow through that smoke for you? I don't know whether you share this view or not. What's happening right now, the Democratic Party, right, the Democrats are having terrible problems because of bad policy. We overheated the economy with the trillions of dollars worth of spending, right? We shut down our own energy resources here. We've gone ahead and defunded the police. I mean, you go through the policies that they have promoted and embraced, right? Look at the violence that surrounded the Dobbs decision. There was an assassination attempt on a Supreme Court justice, right? You go through all this type of stuff, and the number one issue in Americans' plates right now, the most important thing to them is inflation. It towers above abortion. It towers above climate. It towers above all these other issues, right? That's the number one issue. The number one issue for them. So why are you hearing the president say democracy's under attack? It's because we all want our democracy to be preserved. He's lying. It's not under attack right now. And this is a way, because they know the turnout is going to be low, they're saying we got to somehow motivate people to get to the polls. This is all about motivating people to the polls. That's what that speech was yesterday. That's what everybody's saying now. Last night I was surfing the channels. I came across one of the late night show hosts, Colbert, right? Catholic, right? Shame on you, Colbert. He had on Warren, Senator Warren. And again, it was a whole thing about getting people out to the polls. And it was these softballs. And I get it. Look, I hope everybody goes to the polls. I'm not against that, right? But I just see their tactics. I see what they're doing because things are so low. And it's these MSNBCs, these CBSs, these NBCs, the ABCs. It's all this type of media that advances this democratic ideology, you know, this very liberal, let's indoctrinate your kids and redefine gender and kill children. It's that ideology that these platforms don't want to see threatened. That's why they put these senators on and they do these softball interviews. And, you know, it's just frustrating for me as I watched that last night. I can kind of see through the smoke. As I said, we'll talk more about it. I mean, for the president to say democracy's under attack, and that's because of Donald Trump, you know, American democracy is under attack because he defeated former President Trump of the United States. And that he refused to accept election results is what he's saying. Yeah, Ed Morrissey, who is a guest host on the show, and he hails from hot air, he says, you know, Biden didn't mention the fact that Democrats refused to accept the results of the 2016 election, right? Remember, they came out, Hillary said it was stolen, right? Stacey Abrams, the Georgia gubernatorial candidate, right? She never accepted the results of the 2018 election in her state where she lost. When you lose, you don't believe it, right? Oh, no, something's got to be wrong. So it's not really clear to anyone, I think, how this speech was supposed to make people want to vote for the party. I don't. I'm just sitting back here taking a look at it. I'll break it down for you tomorrow. We'll dive into that in much greater detail. But there's a lot to talk about. I'll fill you in on interest rates and so much more. I do want to change gears. I do want to talk, if we could. Okay, Maggie, let's do it. Maggie said, how about audio three? One more story. I want to get to a guest, Matthew Davis, is going to be stopping by. I want to talk a little bit about Gisele Bündchen and Tom Brady and a whole lot more. Let me do this. One final story, because Maggie and I were talking about this before we came into the studio. Just a quick update on where we are. Federal Reserve, as you know, right, they voted to raise interest rates another 0.75%. That's the fourth hike so far this year. And that pace of increase, really, I don't think has happened before. The Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, he told reporters this, and he said, quote, "We are moving our policy stance purposely to a level that will sufficiently be restrictive to return inflation to 2%. But that's not the last of it. The target is to get the Fed's interest rates up to a total of about 3.75 and 4%. So you could see another hike like yesterday. So it may not be over. That's not good news if you're trying to get a mortgage or some other type of loans. Of course, the other issue the Fed needs to dance around is the very real possibility of recession, and something a lot of economists and large company CEOs believe is unavoidable. So how is this affecting you? That's the question, right? Thanksgiving this year, they say, is going to be a lot more expensive. It's not just the gas to get to your loved ones' homes, right? But there's a general increase overall. Food costs are through the roof. Here's a little from News Nation on, believe it or not, a turkey shortage.
With just weeks left until Thanksgiving, you may have to find a turkey alternative for your holiday feast. Say what now? The U.S. government is warning of a big shortage of those big birds, and it's all because of a breakout of the avian flu this past year, bird flu. According to the CDC, bird flu has killed more than 8 million turkeys this year. The Secretary of Agriculture is warning that some of the turkeys being raised for Thanksgiving dinner might not have time to grow to the usual 20 pounds. So you'll probably have a turkey on the table this year, but you might have to buy two instead, or we've heard that there's plant-based turkey out there. The script says it's quite convincing. I can never be convinced.
Yeah, nothing like a turkey, right? Especially a turkey sandwich. We'll see. 43 states were hit by a problem that had led to, I think it was a turkey flu, an avian flu. 46 million turkeys have been taken out. 46 million of them. So there you have it. Hey, we're talking sports, right? Philadelphia, another great team. They're undefeated in the NFL. I'm looking at two great quarterbacks, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, right? Both have losing records this year. I mean, these guys are MVPs. They're Super Bowl champs. They're going to be Hall of Famers. Tom Brady made a lot of news recently. Of course, you probably heard he's being scrutinized after he announced his divorce from his wife, Gisele Bündchen, after about 13 years of marriage. They have three children, and over the years, you know, you can see that the two had their spats, but this divorce, I want to talk about because, you know, Tom is Catholic, right? I believe she is too. And the problem I've often wondered about is, what has influenced Tom? Where is his faith? What's happening behind the scenes? You know, it's said that Gisele, he did an interview one time where he said his wife is a good witch and that she uses these superstitious rituals in an attempt to win him over. And, she predicted, his wins and his losses and a whole litany of other things. I've invited to stop by today Matthew Davis. He writes about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the NFL for Heavy.com, and he's covered Tom Brady, his time in Tampa since 2020, and actually reached out to the show and says, hey, I'm familiar with canon law, the faith, and I actually write for Tampa. I'd love to talk a little bit about Tom Brady. And I said, well, why not? He's interviewed lots of professionals and Olympic athletes throughout the year, and it's good to, throughout the years, it's good to have him with us today to give us some insight on Tom Brady and what's now unfolding. Hey, first of all, it's great to have you with me today, Matthew. Such a delight to talk with you. Matthew Davis, are you there? All right, well, we'll give him a second to get connected. I think we're having just a slight issue. If you want to get into the conversation too, it's 888-914-9149. It's 888-914-9149. Let me tell you a little bit more while Maggie gets him connected to us. Brady's wife, Gisele, was this Brazilian supermodel. He got married in 2009. And Brady says, she always makes an altar for me at the game. Yeah, because she wills it. It's kind of like The Secret, right? She puts together this altar, brings pictures of my kids, has special stones, has healing stones, has protection stones, puts this necklace around my neck. And he says, I just learned to follow whatever she tells me to do. So we'll see. Apparently, that wasn't the best advice for marriage. So we'll see. Hey, I'm joined now by Matthew Davis. Hey, Matthew, thank you for joining me. Good to finally be able to connect.
Yes, you're welcome, Joe. Thank you very much for having me on. It is great to connect. And yes, it's been a very unusual season for Brady. And it almost makes you wonder, is there something to this witchcraft thing where, like, is this affecting his play? There's been some theories floated out there. I would say that they're kind of more like fan kind of theories. Yeah. But there was a play, if you go back to a couple weeks ago, they played the Carolina Panthers, and there was this wide open pass to the superstar receiver, Mike Evans, who just dropped the ball wide open, and it like just bounced, ricocheted out of his hands and bounced around a few yards. And it was almost eerie. It's like, is this normal? Like, this is really weird. I mean, I know receivers drop balls all the time, but it looked strange. With that said, I mean, it is very much on the level of theory. Is that impacting this play? But the thing is, you dabble in witchcraft, you're asking for trouble. And I'm not surprised. We're seeing what we're seeing this year.
It's interesting you bring it up. I didn't expect to talk about this particular angle, but it's something that Maggie and I were talking about before the show, too. I done a show a couple weeks ago on Aaron Rodgers and doing ayahuasca. He took a trip, I think it was to Peru, and went on like a three-day trip on these hallucinogenics. A lot of people are doing it. They're supposedly helping with depression and all these other things. But he had some strange encounters. And when you open yourself up to that type of stuff, when you're Brady – he says, at first I thought my wife was crazy, Brady says. And then 4 years ago, we were playing Seattle Seahawks. And she says, you better listen to me. You know, this is your year, but you know, this is all the things you got to do to win. And he did those things, and supposedly he won. And 1 year he told him she wasn't going to win. And so he's bought into this whole type of stuff. When you open your door to that, to the occult, you do brush up against the dark grit that I think often comes with it. But then again, you look at the Packers and how terrible their team is, right? They have no receiving core. Could it just be that these teams are in transition?
It could be. With the Buccaneers, on just a natural level, there's been an insane amount of changes. It just seems like ever since Antonio Brown went crazy back in January 2nd of this year, nothing's been the same. Brady had his retirement, then unretirement. They had a young offensive lineman retired unexpectedly. They lost a few key pieces in free agency. Rob Gronkowski retired after really being on the fence all offseason, and there's still rumors he might come back. And I have a hot take on that later if you're interested.
I am very interested. But let's talk about that for a second. Brady retired, right? And then he came back again. I said, you know, there's no way the one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time is going to go out with a whimper. I mean, okay, I'm retiring, and you're on to another season. I know he signed a big contract with Fox for 10 years worth, hundreds of millions of dollars. But that said, what was the deal with that? Why did he retire and then say, I changed my mind?
You know, it's interesting, Drew, how that kind of came about. There was a lot of reports, you know, unnamed sources saying that he was going to retire before he ever announced it. There was a social media snafu with one of his companies revealing something. Then it was taken off of social media within an hour. And then he finally came out a few days later, announced his retirement, but he notably never used the word retirement. And then all of a sudden, there was all the speculation he's going to go buy ownership in the Miami Dolphins and play for them.
Wow.
Or he wants to go to San Francisco and play for his hometown team, the 49ers. And all these things fell through. And he came back to the Buccaneers and said, my place is on the field. And that was right before NFL free agency beginning. So it was a very well-timed thing on his part. And he simply wanted to keep playing, and it looked like they were going to get a lot of their guys back, and they mostly did. They had a really big injury during training camp, the center, and the center, no pun intended, is not the center of attention in football, but you lose a good center, your team's in trouble on offense. Well, that's kind of what's happened.
Matt, stay with me for a second. I got to take a short break. Sure. When we come back, I want to pick up on what happened with Brady and his relationship. I know you cover him. He was raised Catholic. We could talk about whether he had a Catholic wedding, whether he needs an annulment. You know, was Giselle behind a lot of this? We'll take a look at that and a lot more. Also coming up in the next half hour, if you're divorced, if you're Catholic and you are looking into annulment, we're going to take a look at that. We'll take a look at communion and so much more. We've got a lot to talk about in the next half hour. I'm going to just take a 2-3 minute break, and I'll be right back.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
After 13 years of marriage, 7-time Super Bowl winning NFL quarterback Tom Brady and supermodel Gisele Bündchen have finalized their divorce. Brady, who currently plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, announced on Instagram Friday that the couple decided to end their marriage after much consideration. Adding, quote, "We arrived at this decision amicably and with gratitude for the time we spent together."
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, Tom Brady grew up in a Roman Catholic home. He admitted, he did an interview in 2015, that he and Bündchen are, well, we're kind of into everything religiously. So like a lot of Catholics, you might know that Catholic upbringing, those seeds are planted, but they probably have drifted away from the faith. His answer was in response to a question. Somebody asked about the presence of a menorah that he had in his home. You probably heard the news. Gisele and Tom are breaking up. They were married in 2009. I'm joined today by Matthew Davis. He writes he writes about the Tampa Bay Bucks and the NFL for Heavy.com. He's covered Brady's time in Tampa for a long time. And let's pick it up on this point, Matthew, if we could. What do we know about Tom and Gisele's faith, their Catholic life, and ultimately what brought this divorce about, this breakup?
Yes, Drew, it's quite interesting. Both of them are raised Catholic or were raised Catholic, from Catholic families, and they had a Catholic wedding at St. Monica's Catholic Church in Santa Monica, California in 2009. So they are presumed married by the Catholic Church, as I understand it. And therefore, when the media is out there saying that they're single, well, legally, civilly, yes, but they're really married in the eyes of God. And objectively, naturally, they're still married. Mm-hmm. And really have to act as such until, you know, proven otherwise. I think Brady has a respect for the faith. I don't know what level, but I know that he saw Pope John Paul II in 2004. And he was asked about Pope Francis during his visit in 2016. And a reporter asked him, so did you watch it on TV or anything? He's like, oh, yeah, I did. And then he kind of joked, do you trust him or trust Bill Belichick more? And, of course, what is Brady going to say? He's kind of just right. Cracked a smile and joked. Right, and it's right.
That's awesome.
And he's very clever with the media, with that said. And so he's been very vague, but he's also been very intentional about what he said. I know he had a really good explanation on his podcast. He has a podcast every Monday night with host Jim Gray, and he talked about the divorce. And he just said, you know, focusing on the kids now, focusing on my work as a player. But notice his wording is very interesting. Even in his Instagram announcement, he calls Gisele his wife. He doesn't even name her. He just calls her his wife. And then during the podcast, he talks about his family. Now, granted, that just might be the fruit of seeds growing up in a Catholic home where he recognizes this is still my family. People in the world might say, well, he's just emotionally holding on. And he is the one that really didn't want this to happen. At least that's what the reports indicate. But again, I think you're right. I think there's those seeds of faith that are there, even if they're ignored, even if they're not watered. As for Gisele, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the witchcraft. Even if she calls herself a white witch, I mean, there's no good that can come from witchcraft. We all know that. And that's obviously taken her away from her faith. I know that she's been very public about certain church teachings, namely abortion. And so there's an opposition there, which obviously is much more serious than just kind of dabbling and trying out other things, because then you're really not only opening the door, you're really being overt to, you know, the Catholic Church and Christ himself.
Yeah, you could be Catholic in name, but if you're not in communion with what she teaches, then you really you're out of communion with the church, you know. And when it comes to differing, especially on an issue as fundamental as life and the commandment that thou shalt not kill. I mean, I don't think it gets any clearer than that. Hey, Matthew, I only have a moment or two left. How likely is it that they'll somehow stay together? You know, Brady left and came back. You know, she wants him to be home, raise the kids. He's made enough money. He's done his thing. But I think his first love is football, of course, unfortunately, should be his wife and his children.
Yes.
But any chance that, you know, after this season, Brady, you know, will retire and that maybe he'll be the father and the husband that Gisele kind of wants?
I really wondered that too, Drew. There was an report out from NFL Network right at the start of the season that this was going to be Brady's last. He's never really wanted to announce it himself. And it might be, the signs are really pointing to it. Yeah. Would it bring about reconciliation? I mean, there's one report out there that says that this has nothing to do with football. There's other issues in their marriage besides this. With that said, we just have to hope and pray for the best. I mean, really, we need to pray for them as individuals. If they're both not walking with Christ, that's almost, I almost dare say, almost a bigger issue than their marital issues. But it, obviously, it all kind of goes together, right? Yeah. If we're not walking with Christ, our marriage is going to be in trouble. So we definitely hope and pray for the best for them. Always a chance. I mean, that's the thing I think people forget. When the divorce happens, that's not the end. There's always a chance of reconciliation. There's very rarely a circumstance that's too unsafe for the couple to return to the common life. Yeah. So we can definitely pray for that. So it's going to be interesting to see. With that said, I do want to squeeze in my hot take, if you don't mind.
No, please, go right ahead.
I've actually been very impressed as an observer of Brady in the past week. On his podcast, you know, again, I think it's a very textbook example how to move forward from divorce. Focus on your family. Focus on your children. Focus on bettering yourself. He went out and did hurricane relief like the next day after announcing his divorce. I mean, a good thing to do for any of us that are going through something that's really difficult is to think of others and reach out. And then the last thing, kind of going to my hot take, that is, I see him reconnecting with Gronkowski on a deeper level as friends. Through all this, I just think it would be something natural he would do.
Right.
And maybe if the Buccaneers can string together a few wins, which is the big kicker, I think Gronkowski comes back. It's like, let's go. Let's save the season. Let's win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, right.
Let's go out on top. I think it might happen.
I'd find it hard to stay away as an NFL player. You know, your time in the league is so limited. It's like a broadcaster, you know. I love what I do here. The thought of being away from it, it's just not in my frame of reference, you know. So when you're away and you're watching it on television, you're watching your buddies play, you're thinking, gosh, I could have done that. I could have made that play better. So we'll see. Hey, Dave, Matt,
absolutely.
Thank you very much for reaching out and for joining us. I know that you know, people can follow you and your writing, of course, online there. And the best way to connect, I'm assuming, is what? Just heavy.com?
Yep, heavy.com or Heavy on Buccaneers on Facebook.
All right, sounds great. We'll track you down there and keep up your good work. Who do you like? Final question, just football-wise. You know, I grew up rooting for the Philadelphia Eagles. I'd lived in the Green Bay area for years, probably about 17 or 18 years, and it's very easy to become a Green Bay fan there because they're one of the few teams in the NFL that are owned by the people, and I fell in love with the Packers very quickly. How do you see the Eagles doing? How do you think they're going to fare?
I like what they're doing right now. Everything's clicking. It's the question of can they beat whoever comes out of the AFC?
Yep.
Because the Bills look like juggernauts right now, and
they
the
do.
Chiefs are looking as good as ever.
They killed the Packers last week. Boy, it was something else. It's an interesting year.
Really
you never
was.
Know. Hey, well, thank you very much. Your pick, before I let you go, Phillies or Astros?
I like the Phillies.
I like
think they're going to do it.
Do you really? Wow, that's fantastic. I hope you're right. I'm rooting for them, too. Hey, we'll catch up again. Matthew, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Drew. You have a great day. God bless.
You too. God bless you. It's Matthew Davis. Say a prayer for Tom Brady, all right? Say a prayer for Giselle. Say a prayer for all those going through troubled marriages where there is division, where there is infidelity, where there is just, I don't know, marriages sometimes I think can grow tepid and cold, you know? And I've seen this a lot in terms of what happens, the dynamic of a relationship. You know, you fall in love young, it's those early stages, you're, you know, totally into the other. Next thing you know, you have a family. Your family becomes your love. You know, you raise your kids. But meanwhile, the husband or the spouse, one or the other, is out building their career, right? And then the kids are grown. They leave the house, and what happens? You look across the dining room table, the kitchen table, and you don't recognize your spouse anymore. That flame of love, that 20, 30-something desire that you once had is no longer there. You're separate people. And I've seen so many people after 25, 30 years of marriage divorce, break up. You know, they say the passion's not there, the love's not there, it's not the same person. You know, we just grown cold, the flame is out. I mean, you hear all sorts of stuff. Brady and these celebrities, Giselle, I mean, those marriages, they already have a strike against them. Unfortunately, a lot of those, so much temptation and challenges living in public life like that. They're now civilly divorced, but the church, you know, whose divorce papers, you know, those divorce papers don't mean much. What they went through with their lawyers in front of a judge has no impact on the real status of their marriage, which is determined not by civil courts, right, but by God. So maybe you're getting divorced too. but you had a Catholic marriage, right? The outlook on marriage is completely different than how the rest of the world views it. And those different outlooks means that there are going to be different ideas about how marriage can end, or even if it can end. You may be married for life, even though you feel like that flame has gone out, right? I'm going to take a short pause. When I come back, Michelle McAloon is going to join me. We're going to take a look at Catholics, the word divorce, annulment, what you can do with communion, and so much more. What if you've remarried? We'll get into all this and much more. If you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Of course, the Chapel of the Divine Mercy is only about 20 minutes away. Tell one other person and join me for that powerhouse prayer. I'll be right back. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about divorce. It's so common in our country today. On average, 1 in 2 marriages end up in divorce. Maggie and I were having a conversation right before the broadcast, and she says, you know, Drew, when I was growing up, I can't remember. You know, I maybe a couple friends whose parents were divorced. And I said, you know, when I was growing up, I couldn't remember. I can't either. It's so funny. But today, there are so many people who I've got a guy that I went to high school and grade school with. I grew up with him. He's a lifelong buddy. I used to play baseball with him. He's been divorced 3 times and is now in his 4th marriage. And I actually said to him, I didn't say to him, I said to my wife, I said, you know, okay, I understand the first mistake he might have made, maybe even the second, but if I was a girl getting into that 3rd relationship or now maybe the 4th, I'd be like, yeah, maybe the problem's on this end. So you got to discern those things. You know, a lot of Catholics aren't very well catechized on the meaning of marriage. You know, even though you go through these marriage prep classes or through some kind of prep retreat, I think there's a great illiteracy when it comes to what the sacrament is about, what the conditions for it are. When you look at the divorce rate among Catholics after no-fault divorce was first legalized in 1969, those rates are just about the same for everybody in society. That's tragic because we're Catholics. We should be different from the rest of the society. And as marriage rates plunge, Catholic marriage rates have gone down at the same pace as the rest of society. So if Tom Brady decides he wants to marry another woman, he's going to have to convince a tribunal in the church that his marriage was never valid and, you know, get his marriage annulled. Let's talk about it. I'm joined by Michelle McAloon. She's a canon lawyer and a writer and is giving us her time tonight from Germany. And I'm delighted to reach her at this late hour. Thank you, Michelle, again, for your service to the church and especially to joining us here today. It's good to have you with me.
Thank you, Drew. I really appreciate that, the opportunity to be able to speak about marriage, because I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of Catholics are not catechized in our very special understanding of marriage, not only Catholic marriage, but all marriages.
You know, I look at this Tom Brady situation, and I thought it was a great springboard for us to talk really about what marriage is, the sacrament. Why a lot of people think, hey, it's just not a piece of paper where you go before a judge and you end up getting divorced and you remarry whoever you want. Maybe you could lay out for those who maybe right now are having troubled marriages or in this situation, what's so different about how the church views marriage and how the rest of the world views marriage that the church doesn't recognize the effects of civil divorce?
Right. So what we say is in the Catholic Church, we believe that marriage is a matrimonial covenant, and a covenant is something, it's something more than a contract. We recognize the contractual elements of a marriage, but we say it's something more. It is a promise, much like I am your people, you are my people, I am your God. It is a covenant where one man and one woman, we're not confused on that point, one man, one woman, establish between themselves a partnership of the whole life. So we believe you marry once, and you are married your whole life or until one of the spouses passes away. And it is ordered for two reasons. For the good of the spouse, that means flourishing. How does the human being flourish within that marriage? And the procreation and education of offspring. So that is what we understand marriage. And we say it has essential properties. And these essential properties of marriage are unity, that's togetherness, and indissolubility. And that's a big word for you're married forever. You are really married as long as you two, as husband and wife live. You are married forever. And this is very different from no-fault divorce and I've been married for 30 years and now I want to trade in for another one. We really understand that the importance of marriage speaks to the best part of the human being, to allow the human being to flourish.
It's, you know, well, thank you. I think it's well said and very clear. If somebody realizes, you know, this marriage is not working out, maybe I married too young, maybe I was under pressure, maybe we got married because he, you know, got me pregnant or whatever the situation is, right? How does a tribunal go about determining whether or not there really was a marital bond? I think of the Tom Brady case, you know, these are two intelligent people, adults, they got married in 2009. You know, what's the criteria they use? I know every situation is a little bit different, but I think it would be hard to figure out, especially somebody who's been married, like that case I gave you, 25 years, when they were 22 years old and they got married, they were totally in love, and now they can't stand each other. So how do you go back? How does a tribunal go back and determine whether or not there really was a marital bond?
Okay, so that's a very good question. So what we look at is when someone comes to a church tribunal, and that's basically a court, and it's in every diocese in the world there, and it's run by something called a judicial vicar, they ask for a declaration of nullity. There's really no such word as an annulment or divorce in Catholic language. So what a declaration of nullity is, what we look at a marriage that we thought was according to church law and to understanding of marriage. And what we're looking at is what was missing that was required for that validity of marriage. And remember, again, we go back to our working definition, a covenant between one man, one woman, partnership of life, procreation, good of the spouse, unity and indissolubility. So what we do is we have something called grounds. And these grounds are basically their reasons. We look at what could have gone wrong that would have affected consent. And why is that word consent so important? Because consent alone brings marriage into existence. And if there's a defect in consent, it can make the marriage invalid. So we look at grounds that maybe look at why they could not consent, why, what was wrong with consent. And some of those things are based on psychological grounds. If someone marries very, very young, and they, you know, 18 or 19, and maybe they didn't have maturity that was normal for an 18 or 19-year-old development because they had a very hard home life growing up. They came from family of divorce. They came from drugs. They came from alcohol. And it did something that did not allow them to mature in a normal development. And they got into a marriage without realizing really what they were doing, the obligations of marriage, of how to live out the marriage commitment. There's things about lack of reason. If you have a psychological ground in a personality disorder, that we see that a lot. Sometimes marriage is invalid because of male impotency. We see that every once in a while. Or maybe, you know, very, very rarely, it's just total ignorance. They didn't understand what marriage was. people who get into marriage by fraud.
Yeah.
Marriage has to be of free consent.
Yeah.
There is no human power in the world that can make two people marry. So you have to be free to marry. You have to have a clear intellect, and you have to have a clear will.
Right.
You have to be able to give yourself in this marriage. And so we look at what kept these two people from actually consenting to our understanding of
right.
marriage.
Gotcha.
And we presume all marriages are valid until proven otherwise.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. Look, let me do this because time ticks by so quickly here. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. I'll go and take a couple quick calls. Ryan is listening to us in Arizona. Ryan, hi. You're on the air today with Michelle McAloon.
Hi. Oh, man. I can't believe I made it on with you, Drew. I love your show. Goodness.
Thanks. Thank
so
you.
So humbled. So me personally, I'm civilly divorced, but I took the stance to stay chaste to my wife or civil ex-wife, regardless of it. But everywhere I go, I see Catholics that are remarried, dating, or whichever. And I heard a statistic that 99 out of 100 annulments are granted. And from like friends on a secular standpoint, they just call it Catholic divorce. And I know it's not the actual meaning of what it is, but how do I defend it? Because the actions are speaking differently than, you know, the teaching. Do we need reform?
That's fantastic questions, Ryan. Thank you so much. I'll let you take it, Michelle.
That is a great question. And a couple things I want to caution you on is no one really knows what happens in a marriage. And that is what we discern in a tribunal. And it's a very, very thorough process. Do I think all tribunals apply the law in the same way or in the same manner? No, by all means, I do not. I know it is frustrating for a lot of people who get, it's called a negative, where their marriage is not declared null because the tribunal has found reasons that they believe the consent was valid. The church represents the culture seeps into the church and the church seeps into the culture, although that seems to be less and less the case. But the church is influenced by the culture. And that's, you know, I think what we really have to do as Catholics is we have to train our children and our young people on the vocation of marriage and what marriage truly, truly means. We train people for the vocation of the priesthood. We also need to do that for marriage. And the best marriage training is a good family life.
That's well said.
Does that answer your question, Ryan?
It does. It's just there's so many other voids, I guess, that need to be filled in the situation. It's complicated for sure, but I mean, it does give me a direction to kind of focus my attention, especially towards my children.
Ryan, thank you. Yeah, as Ryan was talking, I thought, well, okay, he chose to stay married. He really believes his marriage was valid. You're saying he really should go through the tribunal to determine that one way or the other, right, Michelle? But I'm also thinking, okay, let's say for some reason I totally fell out of love with my wife, right, and marriage was horrible. Isn't it possible for some of the people who want divorce to go in and influence the tribunal? I could say, you know, I was kind of immature at the time, or I felt pressured, or whatever the situation is. I just got to think it's going to be hard for the tribunal to discern what is indeed the truth if somebody wants out of their marriage and they want to be able to remarry again. But then again,
right.
they have to stand before God, too.
It.
So, you know, if you're going to lie, you're going to lie. But
right, absolutely. And that's really the work of the tribunal. The tribunal, you've got to remember, they do marriage case after marriage case after marriage case. So they really are experts on marriage. And you start seeing patterns.
Yep.
Human sin is boring, right?
Yeah, right.
Because it's repetitive.
Yep.
So you start seeing patterns. And what happens is we try to get a lot of witness testimony. We try to really ask penetrating questions. We try to really get people to really write good narratives. And a lot of it is. I'd say a lot of it is intuitive too. When you hear something, and you know what, you can tell when people are lying. You can tell what the goal is in a lot of cases. No, you know what? There's probably some that get away with it. Sure. But you just have to remember that these are people that work with marriage day in and day out. They swim through the brokenness of marriage. Yeah. So there really isn't a lot of new under the sun, I have to tell you,
Michelle,
for a while.
I was referring to a friend of mine who said, I think on his third wife or fourth wife, I can't determine. But I'm thinking, this guy's Catholic. I know some of his weddings at least were Catholic. The first one was. I went to it. What happens in a tribunal if he goes for annulment after annulment? Do they begin to say, hey, this guy's not well-formed? Or do you have? How does it work with somebody who has multiple divorces like that? And they keep making the same mistake.
Well, and that's the tragedy. You see that and you want to just scream. Why are you still making the same mistake? I think after, you know, and again, I cannot comment on your friend's situation, right. But when you start seeing three and four, there's some issues.
There really are.
And there's a pattern of behavior. There's issues. And it's, you know, unless you really get in, you can't judge. But you know what? We call it a red flag. It is a red flag. Something's going wrong here. And that's what we look at.
Michelle, I got to leave it right there. I'm going to have you back. Lots of phone calls. A lot of people would love to talk to you. I'd love to find out about people who find themselves going through a no-fault divorce, even though they want to stay in their marriage. But we'll talk again. Thank you for being with us. Always great to have you. The Chaplain of Divine Mercy straight ahead. Stay with me.